goes. Tell me where the spirit goes.
This is KBOO 90.7 FM, and you're listening to Bread and Roses, our weekly women's news and public affairs show. Some of you may have heard the announcement that we were going to speak tonight to Ruth Rosen, who is a journalist and a historian and a professor at the University of Berkeley. She published a book recently about the women's movement, and we were going to talk to her about an article she wrote about sexual assault in Iraq. However, she went on a sudden trip, so it looks like I won't be able to get her on the phone tonight. I will probably try in a later show. But I will talk a little bit more about the article she wrote. But the other guest I have on the show, and I'm very pleased she was able to take the time, is Sarah Rich. And Sarah, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening. Sarah Rich, you are the mother of U.S. Army Specialist Susan Swift of Eugene, Oregon.
Suzanne, yes.
Yes, and Suzanne, I don't know if she still is, but she was facing to be court-martialed for returning to Iraq. So we're going to talk to you a little bit about the details of what happened there and what the current situation is. What happened with your daughter?
Well, she joined the military, and she was immediately deployed to Iraq.
Did she know that was going to happen?
No, we did not know that was going to happen. She signed up for 5 years instead of four because they told her that if she would be, she would sign up as a military police officer, she had to sign up for 5 years. And the reason she wanted to be a military police officer was specifically because they told her that she would not be deployed to Iraq.
But then, oops, she was.
Yes, she was.
So
immediately. Right out of her advanced training.
How old is your daughter?
When she went in, she was 19.
Wow.
Now she's 22.
So your daughter did go to Iraq, and what happened from there?
Well, when she was in Iraq, immediately, as soon as she stepped foot on foreign soil, her sergeant, her platoon sergeant and her first sergeant, who was her squad leader, immediately started praying, you know, doing this stuff where they would ask her for sex and they would harass her and punish her and do very inappropriate things to her. Now, you know, since then we've learned a lot. We've learned about the word command rape, where somebody who has life or death decisions over you in a combat zone coerces somebody into a sexual relationship. It's basically like incest. It's that horrible and that traumatic. And we've also learned about the term called military sexual trauma. So these things happened to Suzanne when she was in Iraq. I knew that it was happening. I offered to help to call our congressman, and in fact, I did call our congressman, and she was too scared for her life to do anything, for me to do anything. So we didn't do anything the entire time she was there.
Uh-huh.
She returned from Iraq, and these sergeants that are there are there to protect and to guide these soldiers. And these sergeants are supposed to be like parents, which is why we make the comparison to incest in command rape. So she returned from Iraq. I said, do you want to do anything? She was so traumatized that she said, no, I can't do anything. I don't want to do anything. And she continued to work as a military police officer at Fort Lewis. We kind of took a deep breath because we thought she had 18 months between deployments. And so we were preparing for November of 2006. She was going to return to Iraq. And in October of 2005, she came home, and it came up with her sister that she was being redeployed earlier. And I told her, I said, well, they can't do that to you. They can't redeploy you after 11 months. You're supposed to have 18 months of mandatory stabilization time. She said that they got in her face and screamed at her and intimidated her and forced her to sign a waiver waiving her rights to 18 months of decompression time. She signed the waiver, and we started preparing for her to go back to Iraq only 11 months after her return from her first deployment. She then, as she was preparing to go back, there were quite a few things that happened that kind of stimulated and re-stimulated her trauma, bringing up post-traumatic stress symptoms, disorder symptoms. And 3 days before her deployment, she had her car packed, she was home, and she had her keys in her hand, she's ready to go back up to Fort Lewis to be redeployed. And she turned to me, she said, Mom, I don't think I can do this. I said, well, what are you talking about? I said, are you kidding me? And she said, no, I can't go back. And she went AWOL from the Army.
Mm-hmm. And then the police came looking for her at your house, is that correct?
6 months later, after she had already been diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder from a civilian clinical psychologist and had been doing therapy, and we hired an attorney, and we were working on her turning herself in, but the Fort Lewis authorities were not cooperating with our attorney. They came to my house at 10:30 at night on a Sunday night and put handcuffs on my daughter. They manhandled me. They took her into the police car, took her to jail where she was strip searched, denied medical care, and put her in jail where she sat for 2.5 days. Sorry, I get fired up about this.
Well, I would too, I think.
Then the Fort Lewis came and picked her up 2.5 days later when they're the ones who issued the federal, the federal warrant and asked for the pickup from the Eugene Police Department. And finally picked her up and brought her back. And basically she's been kept, as a prisoner at Fort Lewis since.
Mm-hmm.
She still wears her jail bracelet that she got at Lane County Jail as a symbol of her being a prisoner and being held against her will. She's able to come and go from base now after she had her military psychological evaluation, which said that she did not have a personality disorder and that she has symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder, but not enough to diagnose her with post-traumatic stress disorder. And so there she sits up at Fort Lewis with nothing happening.
I'm speaking with Sarah Rich, the mother of Susan Swift, who got in all this trouble for refusing to return to Iraq after alleged sexual abuse by her unit, by higher ups in her unit. I want people to imagine this. A 19-year-old who signs up for the military with all these promises that she's not going to be deployed if she signs up for 5 years, and then suddenly finds herself in Iraq and then has to deal with sexual abuse and harassment by superiors.
Daily.
Do you think
daily sexual abuse and sexual harassment.
What is your sense on how common that is?
Well, we know that in the world, one out of every three women is a victim of some kind of sexual misconduct. In the Army, we know that it's two out of every three women in the military are subjected to some kind of sexual misconduct, whether it's sexual harassment, sexual assault, or command rape. And there's even a term, the military sexual trauma.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty prevalent.
And we will hear about this a little more in the second half of the show. I will interview an interview with Chris Hansen we did before on this issue. What is the next step? Do you know what will happen from here?
Well, the investigating officer who was appointed by a general at Fort Lewis has done the investigation and supposedly finished that investigation a few weeks ago, but nothing has happened. Suzanne is basically being held. She has not been given clearance to go back to work or anything, so she does things like pushing papers and answering phones and cleaning weeds out of volleyball courts, really mindless, boring stuff, and she's going out of her mind. She's living in barracks by herself, and we don't know who has the key to her room, so I check in with her pretty consistently in the morning and at night to make sure she's safe. She's in a new unit because when they returned her to her original unit, it was under the supervision of one of the offending sergeants that was one of the first people to ask for sex when they got to Kuwait.
Uh-huh.
That she went to Kuwait to be debriefed or to be briefed before going to Iraq. And immediately she was moved from him, but we had to bring in congressional strong arms to do that because the captain in charge did not want to do that for Suzanne. So we had to bring in a strong arm of a congresswoman, Senator Murray in Washington, to get that done. So I just really do get fired up about this. So basically she's sitting there and they're holding her hostage. There's no movement. They're not doing anything. So what we do is we have a website right now. It's suzanneswift.org. And on Monday morning I'm going to be putting the email, phone number, and addresses of all the investigating generals at the Pentagon and the investigating general, the IG as you call them, at Fort Lewis. And I want people to start calling these guys and asking them and demanding that something happen to Suzanne's case. No charges have been brought up against her. They're just holding her in this nasty limbo.
What would you like to see happen in her case?
Well, Suzanne deserves to have an honorable discharge.
Uh-huh.
She is an Iraq occupation veteran, or combat veteran. How about that? Since we can't call it a war, right? she's an Iraq veteran. She served a year under horrible conditions where she feared for her life, not only from the hostile conditions, but the predators, the sexual predators that were being allowed to harass her daily. She deserves an honorable discharge. She deserves her GI rights so that she can go to school, and she deserves health care so she can deal with this trauma that she has been subjected to, you know, through the abuse of the military.
Uh-huh.
That's what I want to have happen. I want her home. She deserves to come home.
And be out of this limbo that I think, in my mind, actually creates an additional trauma to have no idea, to not be able to go on with your life and have no idea what will happen.
And Gabby, you know, there's a petition on our website also, and the petition has almost 5,000 signatures now supporting Suzanne. And I can't tell you how many military sexual trauma survivors have posted their stories on that, either on the petition itself or emailed us their story.
Mm.
And how this is happening right now. One of the only things that is, you know, is helping Suzanne get through this is knowing that we are helping women that are being assaulted right now in the military stand up for themselves and use their voice and get out of it. And that we're preventing 18 and 19 year olds that are going over to Iraq from being sexually abused and harassed.
What would you tell young people who are running into those recruiters who are seem to be all over the place. Actually, I watched him yesterday morning, literally recruiting homeless people on the streets of Portland.
Well, you know, they spend $2 billion a year on recruitment.
So what would you tell young people about what is true and what is not true about the promises?
Well, what happens is there are no promises. There is not a single promise that a recruiter can make to you. That there is fine print on anything you sign that says the military can change the contents of this agreement at any time. You can get things in writing. Nothing is legal or will stand up in any kind of legal battle. If you, you know, say you promised me this, you promised me that, hogwash.
Uh-huh.
None of it sticks. So remember, if I promise you something, it's not accurate. And that this is, you are, is the U.S. military property. Because when they took Suzanne from my home in handcuffs, they did not read her rights. Because she has no rights, because she's military property.
Uh-huh. So this makes it completely different than if it was a regular case, a regular legal or criminal case.
Because exactly.
It's outside of all those frameworks.
Exactly. There's no case. And you can't sue the military, is what I keep hearing. You can't sue the military.
Huh. Interesting. Could you tell us the website again?
Sure. SuzanneSwift.org, and that's SuzanneSwift.org.
And it seems to me, unfortunately, that her case, as painful as it is for you as her mother and for her, is not at all an individual case. That, you know, you, as
no.
you pointed out, more and more women are telling you stories of having similar experiences.
Yeah, not only are the women that it's happening to currently, but the hundreds of women and men that have written us and said, this is what happened to me. And the common phrase I hear over and over again is it was swept under the rug.
Uh-huh. And there also
and
is a code of silence.
It's because they, well, no, not code of silence. It's the traumatization.
Mm-hmm.
It is the lack of funding to you know, to advocate for themselves. And it is the lack of, you know, the knowledge, knowing that you have rights. Because a lot of the people that have been victimized are so traumatized they can't even think about doing the things that I've been doing with Suzanne.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that's the scary part. You know, I mean, Suzanne didn't want to do this. She didn't want to go public. But when they came to the house and they took her away in handcuffs, you know, there's no fury like a mom.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we were going to do a nice, quiet turn-in, you know, with her attorney present. And they had to come to my house at 10:30 at night and manhandle me and use force with me and for no reason. And handcuff my daughter, strip search her, you know, a veteran, a combat veteran, and subject us to trauma in our own home. It's pretty horrible.
So thank you very much, Sarah, for being available to talk to us about your daughter's case. And again, for people, if they want more information or want to sign the petition or call Congress people in support of Suzanne, the website is www.SuzanneSwiftOneWord.org.
Thank you, Gabby.
Thank you so much for being on the air with us.
Thank you.
And bye-bye.
Foi foguei, nem tão pouco chegador, nem marinheiro, nem cataeiro, nem carpinteiro, nem pedreiro de fogo, nem padeiro, nem pescador, e nem também catador. Dificuldade, boca com cheiro, pobreza, pavor, e lenda de gente em si, vou liberdade, vou cabrigar, pensem que é boi na vida. Para julgar a realidade desse nosso país, vou papá que foi foguete, nem tão pouco chegador, nem marinheiro, nem cabdaeiro, nem carpinteiro, nem pedreiro foi, nem padeiro, nem pescador, e nem também catador. Dificuldade, boca com cheiro, pobreza, pavor, e lenda de gente gentil. Com liberdade, boca brigar, mensem que é boi na vida, para julgar a realidade desse nosso país.
Still listening to KBOO 90.7 FM to Bread and Roses. My name is Gabi, and I was just speaking with Sarah Rich, who is the mother of Susan Swift, who is still in limbo after refusing to turn to Iraq with her army unit that she says sexually assaulted her. So I'll thank you for taking the time speaking with us. And I wanted to add a few things. The issue of military recruitment is huge, and if you follow the news, you may know that in Portland, one of the recent scandals was the recruiters recruiting a young man who was autistic and really, truly not able to understand what he was signing for. And after a long battle, his parents got the recruitment reversed. But there is tremendous abuses. And as Sarah Rich pointed out, whatever a military recruiter promises to a young person, there's absolutely no guarantees that any of that will happen, because they're not obligated to keep these promises. And the reality looks very different from what some of the promises are and what some young people may dream they may get out of joining the military. For example, 35% of veterans, the unemployment rate among veterans is 35% higher than it is among the rest of the population. The whole deal about going to college, there's all kinds of catches and hidden obstacles. You have to actually contribute some of your own money. So it is worth it to read the fine print. And also as a parent, it's definitely worth it to become more aware. Under the No Child Left Behind bill by the current Bush administration, military recruiters now have full access to your child's records in every public school unless you specifically demand that they do not. And there is ways to do that, but it is important for parents to get that information. If you are interested in more information on that subject, you can contact the Portland Military Draft and Counseling Project, which is run by the War Resisters League, and that number is 503-238-0605. The Military Draft and Counseling Project by the War Resisters League, 503-238-0605. I wanted to talk some more about the other aspect of the Susan Swift story, and that is sexual assault in and by the military. You, if you follow the news, you heard the story, I don't know what it was, a couple of weeks ago now, of the young girl, and there's different reports on how young she actually was. Some say 15, some say a little over 20. But this young woman, Abir Qasim Hamza, was raped by five U.S. soldiers in the Iraqi town of Mahmoudia, and then her body was set on fire, and her family was murdered along with her. This case became public because somebody told. There must have been a soldier around that was so appalled by witnessing this that he went public with it, and then the story got told. But I truly believe that there's many, many stories like this that are not being told. And I was going to talk to Ruth Rosen about this tonight. She published an article called Iraq's Hidden Victims about this problem. I couldn't reach her tonight. Hopefully we'll get her at a later show. But the article is readily available on the internet. If you look under Ruth Rosen and the title of the article, Iraq's Hidden Victims, it was published on Tom Paine, Alternet, and all these places. She actually talks about sexual terrorism. And there seems to be a connection between warfare and sexual assault. And I don't know, some psychologists can figure it out. It probably has a lot to do with dehumanizing people to begin with. If your job is to kill, you have to dehumanize others. And there's probably dynamics of power and control. Who knows? But it's an old story with war that it also involves sexual assault, and that by conquering a country, the first step is very often conquering the women and raping the women in that country. In Iraq, sexual assault has happened on several different levels. One is, like with the story of the young woman I just mentioned, is raping civilians. There is a huge number of disappearances of women and girls in Iraq, and it's impossible to really sort out at this point if who's disappearing them, if it's U.S. military, if it's Iraqis, who knows? So it's a free-for-all because nobody's been held accountable. There is no civil oversight. There is no functioning police force. So whoever wants to rape and disappear a female really at this point can do it. So that is one aspect. The other aspect is there are female prisoners in Iraqi military prison. And, for example, there was a female unit in Abu Ghraib, and there are photos. In addition to the photos that were published about the torture, after that there were more photos that were not published, but I believe the U.S. Congress saw it. There were photos of U.S. soldiers raping female prisoners. So this is another area of tremendous sexual abuse in Iraq. It is a huge taboo because basically if the Iraqi women talk about that experience, not only are the chances of getting anywhere with it very low, but they also will be stigmatized in their own communities. So usually these stories don't come out. And the third level is, of course, the Susan Swift story, and that is the sexual abuse by both women and men within the military. And I believe that is also a huge story that also is not talked about because, again, it's a taboo. And as Susan's mother pointed out, people are traumatized. They can't really talk about it. And there is a code of silence within the military, especially under this stress combat crazy situation. So what I'd like to do is air an interview we conducted a while ago with Christine Hansen, who is the executive director of the Miles Foundation. And what the Miles Foundation does is investigate and try to assist people who have been sexually assaulted within the military. The beginning of this interview is a little abrupt because it got cut off, so bear with me.
And also wondering if they're being recruited more aggressively now. I think for several reasons women might choose to join the military. I think it's often the same reasons that a man might join as well. Educational opportunities, training and technical assistance, also the availability of, you know, to obtain funds to support your family, travel, a number of reasons.
And how about the statistics about sexual assault, both towards family members but also towards women members of the military? What are the most current numbers on how common this problem is?
In regards to the statistical data out of the Department of Defense, they released a survey from 2002, which indicated that their sexual assault was at about a 3% level at this point in time. That is a reduction from 6% from their last survey in 1995. However, I think what's more indicative of the volume of sexual assaults in the military is the surveys that we see out of the Veterans Administration. They rate sexual assault at anywhere between 30 to 43% of female veterans have been sexually assaulted while on active duty. And in regards to those, 14% have been gang raped, and another 37% have been raped more than once.
So this means more than one-third of women in the force have been sexually assaulted?
Yes, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think, too, Gabby, the reason for the disparity in those numbers between the 3% and the 30% is that the Department of Defense doesn't have the same anonymity for a respondent when you're doing the survey, nor do they ask those behavioral questions. They ask you more legal definitions about, have you ever been raped? Type of thing. And oftentimes people think that a rape is that stranger in the bushes with a knife, and often, more often than not, it actually is not, both in the civilian community as well as in the military. About 80% of sexual assaults are acquaintance rapes.
And to follow up on that, I was reading your report to the Senate Armed Services Committee and wondering why it is that the military has a policy of not providing anonymity or maintaining confidentiality of victims.
The military puts it in the context of the commander's need to know in order to ensure military readiness. Oftentimes they also use the terminology military necessity, meaning that it's imperative that the commander know if someone is experiencing trauma or difficulties, as well as they believe for community safety reasons that they are required to report that. So there's no privacy or confidentiality.
We recently had local cases in Tacoma, Washington, and in Battleground, Washington, where soldiers returning from Iraq murdered their wives. What are some statistics on domestic violence within military families?
In regards to domestic violence in military families, the volume that we routinely see is about 16 plus per thousand of the cases that are substantiated in the military itself. But yet when we look at the statistical data and we compare it to our civilian communities, you see anywhere between twice as high to five times as high, depending upon what military service branch you're talking about. And then when you also add in intimate partner violence, that being not between just two married spouses as a military counts, but that whole relationship context, boyfriend, girlfriend, significant other, fiance, and that, the numbers may actually even be higher.
Another question that I had for you, Christine, is, and I'm not sure if I was misreading this in the report, but it seems that the military has a more narrow definition of rape. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. The military's definition of rape, if you will, they utilize the terms called by force and without consent. That's known as some form of resistance must occur. So they don't readily recognize acquaintance rape, which may occur, as I mentioned before, and is predominant throughout our society, that between two individuals who know each other, occurs in the same area they're familiar with, etc.
Okay.
And what are the official reporting mechanism and resources on basis, but also for women out in the field? If something happens to them, who can they turn to?
They actually have a number of choices, and that's one of the reasons we call our guides Choices and Challenges. They can seek services through the civilian community, even if they're active duty. They can also seek services through the military or a combination thereof if they choose. You know, for example, following a sexual assault, you might want to go to the emergency room to have a sexual assault nurse examiner perform an examination to collect any evidence. Oftentimes in the military community, they don't have SANEs or sexual assault nurse examiners available at the medical facilities, so you might have to go to the local hospital and emergency room. In addition to that, if you chose to report in the military and go through the judge, advocate general's office, security forces, police department, just as you would, say, in the civilian community as well.
Now, I imagine all of that would be very difficult if you happen to be in a combat zone in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever.
The combat zone sexual assaults that our office has seen, we have 178 credible cases of sexual assault in Iraq, Kuwait, Afghanistan, and Bahrain. And they are very significant challenges for the victims who are in the combat area, that being accessibility and availability of services, their ability to be transported, say, in a convoy, which is potentially dangerous, also the availability of emergency contraception, reproductive services, as well as the personnel needed. Military does not readily have sexual assault nurse examiners, as we have in the civilian community since the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. And if a female soldier over there experiences sexual assault, does she have any ability to, I guess, access mental health or request to actually to leave?
In the military right now, they have what they're calling mental health stress teams that are in the combat zone, or in CENTCOM, as they refer to it. It is not routinely available. You would need to access that at the larger combat support hospitals. So if you are what they call forward deployed, like inside Iraq itself, and that, then you might need to be transported. Also, you might not be able to be there, say, for an extended period of time, but maybe only one or two visits, and you may need additional assistance because of the trauma that results from such violence.
And if the soldiers are not comfortable reporting to people within the military about either the rape or any type of sexual assault, how might they access your information, or how would they get your information?
Several ways. You can find us on the internet. If you literally put it into any search engine, Miles Foundation, you'll come up with our website. We're located on America Online. In addition to that, they can send us emails, telephone us, send us letters, whatever the case may be. And oftentimes we found that those who are in combat zones, the initial contact is from a family member or a friend to our office.
Okay, but you don't actually have any literature that is within the military that they would just have access to, that they're given if they, any kind of resource center on a military base?
We have an enormous amount of literature, everything from trifold, brochures, etc., but they're not distributed on the military installations, regrettably.
Okay. Hmm.
And what would be some of the reasons why a woman may be hesitant to report fellow soldiers for sexually assaulting her?
I think the predominant reason is that violation or concern about the violation of her privacy and confidentiality. Military doesn't have what we call rape shield laws, as we do in the civilian world, so that all of her sexual history, her sexual orientation, or questions about that would all come up during the process of the investigation. The other issue is that many of victims fear reprisals. Now, reprisals in that the fear is a little different in the military than it is in the civilian community. In the civilian community, it's usually related to the assailant or the friends, peers of the assailant. In the military, it's more closely related to how military authorities will respond to the information that you've been sexually assaulted. And potentially, we find that some victims face disciplinary actions for what we call collateral issues like alcohol, drinking, adultery, or fraternization oftentimes. And we've seen that in cases at the Air Force Academy, for example, and we're also seeing that in cases relative to Iraq and Kuwait.
Hmm.
And again, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Bread and Roses, and our guest this evening is Christine Hansen, Executive Director of the Miles Foundation. And we're talking about sexual assault and domestic violence within the military. So just to keep going on you know, reporting sexual assault and rape in combat zones, I'm wondering also what's the follow-up like in terms of, I guess, the investigation that is conducted on the military base or by the commanders. How aggressive is it?
Well, we're finding that many of the investigations, if you will, are being conducted by commanders themselves rather than through the military criminal investigators like CID, OSI, etc. So I think they're very limited. They are very brief. What often is resulted is some kind of administrative action, if you will, rather than a criminal proceeding. So we're very concerned about how they are responding and how the investigations are being conducted, if they're timely, thorough, and appropriate.
And I'm thinking, given how many troops are needed currently in this current operation in Iraq, I'm wondering if you know, there would be less of an incentive to pursue the investigation because they want to keep as many troops as they can.
I think it's not only about retention, but the issue is that, as we were talking about before, the fact the military does not necessarily or readily recognize acquaintance rate. So what's occurring is soldier upon soldier sailor upon sailor, what they refer to as blue upon blue. So oftentimes they don't recognize that it's potentially your battle buddy who is your assailant. And that poses a lot of problems if you've had a previous relationship or you're acquainted with each other, etc.
I'm looking at a photo here from graffiti which was found at the walls of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and it says, "All faggots in the army will be killed." And this was found after a male soldier who was perceived to be gay was killed with a baseball bat by another soldier. How common do you think is assault on sexual minorities, and how likely is that to be reported and then dealt with if it is reported?
I think we still have some very serious issues here, particularly because of that don't ask, don't tell, don't pursue policy that the military continues to maintain. I think that the recent Supreme Court ruling in Lawrence relative to sodomy will cause great reflection and hopefully some changes in the policy in recognizing sexual minorities and the acceptance. I think once the policy change occurs, hopefully there'll be a social or a cultural change and an acceptance as well, because I think all have enormous capabilities to contribute to the military if they choose to do so, as we're an all-volunteer force right now.
I know that you testified in front of actually military communities, the Congress, the Senate. How are you usually perceived when you talk about this problem in front of these official entities and also in front of mainstream media? Are they open to what you have to say?
A variety of responses we find. Oftentimes they're open to it, and then, you know, we're often put in the context of potentially being unpatriotic or traitors or something. That's always a little fascinating, you know, the response of those. And in addition to that, you know, particularly with the assaults that are occurring in the combat zone, the context that we'd like to put it in is that these are men and women who've chosen to sign that contract, if you will, which, you know, obligates the government to support them in whatever manner they so choose, and to ensure that they have everything they need. You know, predominantly, Gabby, one of the things is rape evidence kits are not readily available in the combat zone. So even if you were able to get to one of the larger combat support hospitals, there's potentially an expired rape evidence kit waiting for you there, which would not assist you if you decided to go forward with prosecution. You know, so we need to ensure that men and women who do choose to serve have all supplies necessary.
And, you you know, there's so many topics that we want to discuss on this show. I know, and I'm looking at Gabby, and I'm wondering, should we start asking other questions? But something that we had also spoken about before is, are women in the military, are they sort of trained to just move on? You know, sort of just deal with the situation.
Like toughen up.
Toughen up and just sort of, you know, accept it as part of being in the military.
Well, regrettably, we do still, even though it's 2004, we hear many women who are victims of sexual assault or domestic violence, the terminology soldier just drive on type of thing. And that, to us, is a failure to recognize the trauma that is a result of violence and to deal with it aggressively and in a timely manner. An example of what often results, what the implications are for victims, is that we see that in our Veterans Administration. Veterans Administration in 1992 was authorized by Congress to create the Sexual Trauma Counseling Centers. And recently, through a screening process, they discovered that 22,000 male veterans have noted that they were victims of military sexual trauma while on active duty, and 19,000 or over 19,000 women have been victims of military sexual trauma while on active duty. So the question becomes, you know, waiting decades and that eventually to access service, when the trauma can go from something very simple to something very complex and very serious.
And why don't we take a music break before we slightly change topic? And this is KBOO 90.7 FM. You're listening to Bread and Roses with Chris Hansen from the Miles Foundation. Still listening to Bread and Roses at 90.7 FM KBOO. We're talking with Christine Hansen from the Miles Foundation about sexual assault and other forms of violence within the U.S. military. And so far we have talked mostly about soldiers, female soldiers as victims, and I want to switch a little bit towards victims that are simply citizens in the countries where the United States Army happens to be, either as occupying force or because their base is there. The Geneva Convention says, women shall be especially protected against any attack on their honor, in particular against rape and forced prostitution or any form of indecent assault. What do you have any numbers on how frequent that is, that just regular citizens become victims of assault by military personnel?
I think if we look not only at the United States Armed Forces, but we look at other armed forces around the globe, there are some very significant numbers, such as in the Congo, during the conflicts in Bosnia and Kosovo, for example, which actually resulted in some changes in the in trials relative to rape being a crime of war, if you will, under the Geneva Conventions and within the International Criminal Court. I think it's also reflects we've had recent information relative to sexual assault of women who've been detainees at Abu Ghraib prison, for example, as well as women who have been in the Philippines, Japan, and Guam, where military U.S. military installations are, have also been victims of violence at various points in time. I think, too, Gabby, one of the important things to note is this week the Ninth Circuit Court out of California actually acknowledged and provided asylum to a woman who was a victim of rape during wartime in South America, if I remember correctly. And I think that there's great potential there for granting women asylum and refugee status here in the United States if they become victimized, you know, during the process of war.
And getting back to the situation in Iraq, there's a lot of photos were published, actually,
yes,
with female offenders, but there is also apparently a large number of photos that were not published that the United States Congress has seen, but nobody else. And then the investigator, General Antonio Taguba, talked about videotapes and photographs that showed naked female prisoners, and I'm quoting him, where a male military police guard is shown having sex with a female detainee. And I found that choice of words interesting. Like, can you have sex with a female prisoner if you are a military police? Because to me that implies that there at least may have been consent.
I think that it's important to note that even when we refer to sexual violence or domestic violence, these are issues of power and control that lead to the use of violence to control or manipulate the victim. And it's important for us to recognize that rape is not about sex. It has very little to do with sex. It's about violence, and it's about manipulation. And I think that's important to recognize. I think there are many in the military who are beginning to learn that, if you will. And I think we still have a great way to go in that regard, to do a bit more educating both in the civilian as well as the military community, that when we even talk about rape or...
This was Christian Hansen, who is the executive director of the Miles Foundation. The Miles Foundation is a private nonprofit organization dedicated to providing comprehensive victim services to people in the armed forces. So the topic of tonight's show obviously was sexual assault in the military, and I'm afraid we will hear a lot more about this. This is Bread and Roses on KBOO 90.7 FM. We're coming to the end of our program, but before we go out, I want to make a couple of announcements. One is there will be a rally this Sunday at 1 p.m. in Pioneer Courthouse Square. The theme of the rally is Stop the Killing, Rally Supporting a Ceasefire and Humanitarian Aid in Lebanon and Gaza. And it's sponsored by a host of organizations, human rights organizations. But if you want more information, you can go to www.offer, and that is AUPHR.org. Sunday, July 30th at 1 p.m., Pioneer Courthouse Square. The another announcement is you may have heard of Eyes Wide Open. It's a very powerful display of boots of soldiers who have fallen. And it's brought by the American Friends Service Committee, and this will be in Portland, not this weekend, but next weekend, August 4th and 5th. And it will be displayed in the Peace Park, which, if you haven't seen that, that's worth taking a look at. A chapter of the Veterans Against the War have created a Peace Park between the Rose Garden Coliseum and the East Bank Esplanade. It's in a little piece of grass. They created a giant peace sign. So if you want more information about that, you can contact www.oneword.eyes and then AFSC, American Friends Service Committee, oneword.org. Finally, we just had somebody ask us to announce this. So to check this out. If you have no plans for tonight, here you go. Looking for extras for a local indie comedy film? We are needing extras for a hippie commune scene that is shooting tonight from 9 p.m. until 4 a.m. in Battleground, Washington. If you're interested in participating in that, you can call Amber at 503-816-2371. And some announcements of some events that are a little later in August. The director of NARAL is going to be in Portland on August 23rd, and we'll discuss the legislative battles of for women's choice. So stay tuned for that. I believe we will do a show with her prior to her appearance. And also on August 24th at 7, the film Hablemos de Poder, Talking of Power, about women in revolutionary Venezuela will be shown. Both of these events are in other words, bookstore Wunao, which now moved to Northeast Killingsworth. And if you're interested in that, www.inotherwordsoneword.org. Thank you so much for listening tonight. My name is Gabby. I hope you enjoyed the show. This was Bread and Roses on KBOO 90.7 FM. Have a good evening.